You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We have had three nice summer league games in recent days, but folks, I'm not going to delay. I know what you guys want to talk about. Let's discuss Carmelo, where things are at, because this has been a really strange 72 hours. Actually, I haven't done a podcast since Saturday evening because it's so hard to get a pulse on exactly where this thing stands. The Tim Hardaway Jr. signing, for whatever reason, did seem to be a catalyst. As I said on Saturday's show, the possible reason for that would be now the Knicks are more invested in the here and now with Tim Hardaway Jr. and their potential cap room the next two summers is partially absorbed in Tim Hardaway Jr. now. That makes it more palatable for the Knicks to take on existing salary, be it Ryan Anderson or from a third team who is theoretically acquiring Ryan Anderson in a Ryan Carmelo deal with the Rockets and Knicks. So because of that, it opens up the parameters a lot more than when we thought it would be the Rockets having to find a third team just to give cap space to the Knicks. That would have been really hard to get someone to take Ryan just into cap space. But now the Knicks at least appear to be open to taking on salary. It may not be Ryan Anderson, but they do at least appear to be willing to take on some salary if it's a younger player or something that might fit their positional needs a little more. That opens up the parameters. And so when Tim Hardaway became official on Saturday, we heard from Woj that the Knicks were expected to renew discussions with the Rockets. You could tell the wording from Woj was very forward in that he was expecting a deal that sounded like relatively quickly. And since then, this has bounced around all over the place. Now, everybody's good friend, Jay Sports up in New York, if you're on Twitter, you know exactly who I'm talking about. He said, as of Saturday morning, he was told that Melo would be heading to Houston, and he cited sources on the player's side. And so between that and the Woj report, it seemed like Saturday was a very busy day in terms of movement that this thing might be on the cusp. And then Sunday came and went with almost nothing. And it seemed like that we were drifting back into a mindset that, yes, it's still likely that it could happen because Carmelo wants to happen and the Knicks want to be done with this, but that it might take days, if not weeks or months. Now, I think the probability has always been a deal happening sometime before trading camp, but in terms of the sense of urgency, does this get done now? After Saturday seemed promising, Sunday, with no momentum at all, seemed to kind of go the other direction. Then, Monday, all hell broke loose. You guys know it. There were so many reports all over the place. The ESPN podcast contributor who said that he knew 100% that James Harden had said that this was a done deal. We saw Nene's Instagram post. He ended up deleting it, but in which Nene shared a picture of Carmelo in a Rockets jersey, essentially talked like the deal had already happened, that it was done. As I said, Jay Sports, everybody's guy in New York, it's pretty clear by now, his sources are on the New York players' side. He's got players on the Knicks that he says have been told that Carmelo is being moved to Houston, and of course the ramifications for playing time, potential deals elsewhere on the Knicks roster, that's why they would conceivably keep the players in the loop on this. And then so you combine that with Harden and Nene, and you get a pretty clear sense that on the players' side, you expect movement. And then the other big thing that dropped on Monday night was a report, not from Woj, but a Woj bomb about Woj from our good buddy Ethan over at the Dream Shake. That's the Rockets SB Nation affiliate. He posted that he had heard Woj at the Summer League saying that he expected or predicted a Melo deal would go down Monday night. Now, obviously, it did not, but that tells you that if Woj is predicting that, certainly he's hearing things that make it seem like there's a heightened sense of urgency for a deal to get done sooner rather than later. Now, Ethan ended up taking down that tweet, but that's for reasons related to journalism ethics and such. It's definitely not related to accuracy. I can promise you guys he wasn't trolling. And so based on the information about Woj, the player leaks all over the place, Harden, Nene, we know the relationship between Carmelo and Chris. Dwayne Wade, of all people, even showed a picture of him and Carmelo wherever they are drinking wine, appeared to be in a celebratory mood on Monday evening. All of that on the player's side seemed to point towards a deal being close, and yet here we are on Tuesday, and just like on Sunday, everything is quiet. We seem to go through one day in which we have all these rumors and it seems like something's right on the cusp. And then the next day, everything pulls back and no one really knows where they stand. So I'm going to tell you guys, as I sit here on Tuesday afternoon, how I see it and where I think we are. First things first, I do think a deal is going to get done. Between Carmelo having a no-trade clause, his relationship with Chris Paul, the fact that there's not that easy of a fit for him in Cleveland, the only other destination he would allegedly waive his no-trade clause for, I can't help but think that this deal ultimately gets done, be it a matter of hours, a couple of days, or if it takes weeks or longer. I think eventually Carmelo is going to be a Houston Rocket. It makes too much sense because he can do a lot of the same things that Ryan Anderson does, only with a lot more athleticism and upside for the Rockets. It's a pretty easy fit, and although taking Ryan themselves may not be palatable for the Knicks, I think the desire to move on from this is going to eventually be strong enough. If it's not now, I think certainly as they get closer to training camp to get that distraction off, that eventually they come to the table and get a deal done. And as our friend David Wiener, a.k.a. Bema Thug, said on Twitter last night, it's not like the Knicks, if they keep him, are in great shape. The Knicks, by getting rid of Carmelo, they get a lot of guaranteed money off of their books as well. So it's not just a player that's unhappy and a little bit of a spectacle as they enter training camp and a year that which they clearly want to rebuild around younger players, most notably Tim Hardaway Jr. and Kristaps Porzingis. You also have the guaranteed money that's owed to Melo and unhappy Melo for potentially the next 2 years. So I think ultimately there are a lot of factors pointing to this deal getting done. And I don't think that these players, when you see these things from the likes of Harden and Nene, I don't think they're misguided. I think they definitely have reason to believe that this deal can and will get done. And certainly pushing from Carmelo, it's a players' league, superstars tend to get what they want. If Carmelo is trying to push his way to Houston, ultimately, in this league, there's a good chance that he ends up getting what he wants. What I know y'all want to talk about is the timing. So for the last 48 hours, I've been asking people, sources, if you will, on all sides of the fence, people connected to the front offices of the teams, people connected to the players, etc., to get a sense for exactly where this thing is and why this is so confusing. Why we go in mere hours from this thing seeming on the cusp to this essentially having no end in sight. And what I keep coming back to is the positive momentum, 90% of it comes from the player side of the fence. In short, I think the players on both sides, but especially Carmelo and the Rockets, of course, are trying to speak this deal through. And I don't think it's a bad strategy because everyone knows how much power players wield in this league. Just look at LeVar Ball. I know it's a random analogy, but think about LeVar Ball and how he spoke over and over again about his son, Lonzo, going to the Lakers. Things like that have a way of working out if you're a star in this league. I know it shouldn't be. There are some long-term implications that come with that that might not all be positive for fans. But when players push the envelope, they usually have a way in today's league, especially upper echelon players like James Harden, Carmelo, Chris Paul, of getting what they want. So in this case, it seems like the cart might be a little bit ahead of the horse because when you talk to folks that are close to the front offices, I have not found anyone on either side who feels like this thing is particularly close from a front office perspective. What that means is they are not close to the terms on a deal. I think the bottom line, the thing that's been there for over a week now, is still there, which is the Knicks do not want Ryan Anderson. They know Houston is the most likely destination for Carmelo for a lot of reasons, most notably the no-trade clause. But the Knicks don't want Ryan themselves. They don't want to commit $60 million over the next 3 years to him, so they're trying to find a third team, and they're trying not just find a third team, but on terms that are palatable for both the Rockets and the Knicks. Now, obviously, the Rockets, in theory, could trade more assets, but let's be real, the Rockets are not going to trade Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella. I will give you guys my word. That is not going to happen in this deal. If the Rockets make this, could they trade future assets, such as a future first-round pick, some low-level prospects? Sure, they could. But I feel pretty confident in saying that if Carmelo Anthony comes to the Rockets, the only rotation player that goes out is Ryan Anderson. And maybe not even that if Carmelo gets bought out. But I think that's a scenario that's on the back burner for now. I think there's pretty clear momentum towards a trade. But the bottom line is the players feel like it's happening because everyone wants it. The Knicks want to move on, not just the team, but the players themselves, because they don't want an unhappy Carmelo around. They just want to turn the page and get on with their era of the franchise. The Knicks want it. Carmelo wants it. And certainly the Rockets want it, because, again, if you're just upgrading Ryan Anderson, that's a guy who brings a similar stretch four shooting dynamic, but so much more playmaking, so much more athleticism, so much more upside. It's a no-brainer all the way around. So the players see that, and they say, hey, if we want it, the other side wants it, Carmelo wants it, all three are on the same page, there's no way this deal doesn't get done. And long-term, they're probably right. But in the short-term, there is that matter of the two teams having to come to terms. And so that's why there's so much confidence on the player's side, but there's not as much confidence when you talk to the people on the front offices, because they have yet to come to a deal. Now, again, it could happen at any moment. It's one of those things. It could be as simple as a third team calling and showing an increased willingness to take Ryan. And the deeper we go into free agency, the more likely that may be to happen. Or it could be the Knicks just saying, hey, we give up. We realize we have to do this deal now. And whether it means taking Ryan ourselves, or maybe dropping our asking price, or chipping in an asset to that third team to help them take Ryan Anderson away from us. And of course, for the Knicks, it's not just a matter of getting rid of Ryan Anderson. It's a matter they're also gaining by getting Carmelo's salary off of their books as well, if cap space is a priority to them. So there are a lot of things, and it's one of those situations. It could be one phone call, and this entire deal gets sorted out in less than an hour. We all know that the Rockets trade for Chris Paul. I think they had discussed parameters of a potential sign and trade before, but I don't think they had discussed the potential of doing it before free agency. But when Chris Paul informed the Knicks 3 days before free agency that he was going to sign with the Rockets come July 1st, then once he informed the Clippers of that, then the Clippers went back to the Rockets and they ironed out the deal very, very quickly. So it's not going to take a lot of time, even if they aren't close now, but that's where you have, in my opinion, this discrepancy, is that the players are just looking at it from the standpoint of everybody wants this to happen, and I think they also know they have a lot of power, so I think they feel like the more this is discussed from a standpoint of inevitability, then the more likely it is that this thing ultimately gets pushed through. But the front offices, of course, they have to negotiate the terms, and right now, the Rockets do not directly have what the Knicks want. So, in a sense, it's a stalemate, but it's a stalemate with a lot of incentive for this thing to eventually get done. And my guess is that, honestly, the ball is in the court of the Knicks or third teams. That's what's complicated, because for the Rockets, I think it's pretty clear what they will give up. Now, of course, in addition to Ryan, you could give up some combination of, again, a future pick, some of your lower-level prospects, etc. But I don't think it's a matter of the Rockets being willing or able to give out other rotation pieces. I think it's pretty clear from the Rockets' standpoint, it's Ryan Anderson going out. So, unfortunately, that means a lot of it is not in Daryl Morey's control. In a way, it means Daryl has to almost, well, he can ask him around the league, but he almost has to sit by the phone, check his messages, et cetera, hoping that someone else comes to the table. The impetus is actually on the Knicks a little bit, because they're the ones that are desperate to move on. Whereas the Rockets, even in a worst-case scenario, that somehow this thing did not happen, Ryan Anderson, you can still be a very good team with him in this offense, and he's certainly a great fit alongside Chris Paul, James Harden. You want all the shooters you can get, especially in Mike D'Antoni's offense. The Rockets can be fine as is. The Knicks, I don't think they can. So there's a little more emphasis from the Knicks, be it finding third teams or eventually just swallowing their pride and either accepting Ryan themselves or chipping in an asset to help better facilitate his move to a third team. So I think ultimately that's where things are. Everyone wants this to happen. The odds are it probably eventually will, but the actual terms of this are very difficult to hammer out because the Rockets don't have what the Knicks need. So my guess is that right now the cart is a little bit ahead of the horse when you hear reports of imminent. My guess is that the vast majority of these imminent or tons of momentum reports are coming from people with sources on the player's side for either the two teams or Carmelo himself, because it's pretty clear that's what everyone thinks and wants to happen on that side. Where you're not seeing much momentum is from the front offices themselves, and I think it's pretty obvious because despite all these reports, we actually have not heard any concrete names thrown out besides Ryan Anderson and Carmelo. We haven't even heard a third team outside of one isolated report from our J Sports guy, who isn't even, you know, a credentialed journalist. He threw out Portland a week ago as a possibility. That's the only third team we've even mentioned. We haven't heard players discussed specifically. And from my experience in the NBA, if names have actually been thrown out there, if a deal is actually close, you will hear some of those in the media reports. But yet the fact that you continue to hear that this deal is so close without hearing any specifics on the actual terms, I think there's a lot of kind of speaking it into reality. And the good news is that, you know, it's the NBA. There's a funny way of that happening, especially when it involves...
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Star players. I think we've all seen it with Chris Paul. One of the things that I keep going back to, if this were even a month ago, I'd be skeptical. If this were even a month ago, I'd say, hey, it's possible the players are ahead of themselves and this may not end up happening. That would be my thought even 1 month ago. But then look at the Pat Beverly TriStar show. I did a podcast on this back in June. You can check our archives here on Locked On Rockets. 10 days before the Chris Paul trade to the Rockets. Back then, there was only just two vague links of Chris Paul to the Rockets. Woj mentioned it as a possibility in the podcast, just in an offhand way, not saying that Chris Paul is particularly interested, just said, you know, the Rockets will go after every big name. And then the LA Times mentioned that the Rockets were a team that he'd meet with in free agency. The LA Times actually phrased it as though the Spurs were the bigger threat and also mentioned the Nuggets in the same line as the Rockets. Jonathan Fagan, the Houston Chronicle, local beat writers, did not mention it at all. Chris Paul and the Rockets were not a big deal back on, I believe that was June 18th. And then Pat Beverly, trade rumors involving him, had not started at all. I think Rockets fans at that point, because he was such a good value on that contract, were thinking that he was a big long-term piece. Now, of course, the other side, as we've learned since, because he's a good value on that contract, it also makes him more desirable around the league and thus easier to facilitate a deal with. But at the time, Pat Beverly certainly was not known to be on the block. And Chris Paul, there were a couple of minor links, but certainly it was not a major story. And yet at that TriStar show, Pat Beverly was not even asked about Chris Paul or trade rumors, and he went out of his way to comment on the fact that he had heard himself in trade rumors specifically mention the pursuit of Chris Paul as a reason, and lo and behold, 10 days later, he is traded in a deal for Chris Paul. It's amazing what these players know, and sometimes, in a way, even if the front offices aren't there yet, the players have so much power, and of course they're able to anticipate multiple moves in advance. Sometimes the players know what's happening in a better sense even before the front offices do. I know that sounds crazy, but in this case, it actually kind of was the case. So that's what I think back to here, is that, you know, if you ask the Clippers or the Rockets on June 18th, the day that Beverly made those comments, do I think that either side thought at that point that Chris Paul was a done deal? No, I don't. But at the same time, you could tell that Pat Beverly and some of the players around it did, and lo and behold, they were right. Now, I know you can point out that, well, Chris is a free agent, or was a free agent, and Carmelo is not. But again, Carmelo with a no-trade clause, he may as well be a free agent because he has to approve any deal the Knicks do. And as I said leading off, the Knicks absolutely have an incentive to get this over with and move on without Carmelo Anthony on their roster. So the players have a lot of power, and sometimes, even if they're not the ones negotiating the trades, in today's NBA, what they think matters. The Pat Beverly thing is one example. Another thing related to Chris Paul, we heard from the LA Times after the deal was done that the Rockets, or I shouldn't say the Rockets, because Houston, in terms of the team itself, executives could not recruit Chris Paul because that would be tampering since he was under contract. But of course, players can do what they want. And we've heard from the LA Times that James Harden was recruiting Chris Paul all the way back to the season. And the Rockets have not confirmed that yet. Of course, it's one of those things I think everybody wants to keep hush-hush. But it's pretty clear that from a lot of reports that definitely in June, from the start, that James Harden was all over Chris Paul trying to make this sale. So players, their power matters. And where this is all related, one of the people I talked to yesterday actually mentioned that he had heard that Carmelo's camp had been pushing Houston as an option since April. So to me, that's very interesting. Because if you buy the theory that Harden was recruiting Chris Paul during the regular season, and you know that there is a very tight link between Chris Paul and Carmelo, probably Carmelo's best friend in the NBA, then it's very possible that this thing has been in the works for months in terms of Chris not only trying to get to Houston, but also trying to get Carmelo to come to Houston. And so generally, when players have months to plan it out, that bodes well for the deal eventually getting done. Now, the downside is that, well, if they've been trying for this long, that Carmelo's had a lot of interest in Houston because of the presumption that he would get to play with Chris Paul, and now, of course, the reality, and yet here we are in mid-July, and there's still not a deal. That gets back to the terms. And that could end as soon as tonight. The Knicks could give in and say, hey, we just want this to be over with. And I think that's partially why you're seeing some of these leaks from the players. They want to ratchet up that pressure as much as they can so that the Knicks and everyone involved says, hey, we're tired of this dominating sports center. We're tired of being asked this at our press conferences, at our summer league games. We just want this to be done with. And so I think there's hope that maybe that will pressure the Knicks, because certainly they have a little more to lose at this than the Rockets do. So I think that's part of the motivation. But the other part, this is what we were talking about, one of the top 10 brand names in the NBA. There's a lot of complex mechanisms behind the scenes, and this has been in motion for a while. And that's why, even though the terms aren't there now, I feel pretty confident in this deal getting done. The other part of it, as I said last night, folks, it's pretty clear. Cleveland is not in the mix for Carmelo. Woj has not even mentioned them as a possibility in quite some time. And the reason I mention that is that even if the worst case happens, I cannot see the Knicks going into this season with Carmelo on their roster. Even if a third team doesn't emerge to Ryan Anderson and the Knicks just will not take him, the worst case is a buyout, in my opinion, where they say, hey, we can't do the trade. We think it's better for us to just buy him out and stretch the cap hit over five seasons or whatever it is, the maximum amount of time that they can. Well, in that case, I don't buy for one second that negotiations are this far down the line between Carmelo's folks and the Rockets, and then if he were bought out, that he would choose Cleveland over Houston. I think the reason these negotiations are so focused on the Rockets and so far down the tracks, at least in the eyes of the players, are because there is intense interest between Carmelo Anthony and the Rockets, and I don't buy for one second that if he were a free agent, then that would switch and that he would go to Cleveland. First off, I don't think the fit is as seamless in Cleveland in terms of minutes for him, role, etc., etc. But beyond that, even if the worst happens, they can't ever come to terms, the Knicks can't stomach taking Ryan themselves because of 3 years, $60 million, I cannot fathom a scenario in my mind where the Knicks keep him on the roster for a lot of reasons. And if he's bought out, I can imagine him not picking Houston, given the intensity of the rumblings that we've heard from so many player sources over the last few days. Now, the one bit of pessimism I'll throw into this. One thing I could see making this more challenging than even the Rockets and Knicks may have expected a month ago. The free agency market has gotten thriftier than I think any of us expected. Some of these deals have been handed out, especially in recent days. The 3 years for $16 million, like Patrick Patterson, that was a guy people thought would get well over $10 million a year going into free agency, and he couldn't even get the full mid-level exception. He didn't even get the under the cap mid-level exception with the Thunder. And then you look at Andre Robertson, 3 for $30 million. I know he's a restricted free agent, but that's incredibly low value nonetheless. We even look at P.J. Tucker, 4 years, $32 million, that last year not even fully guaranteed here in Houston. There are a lot of below-market deals going around, or below what we thought the market was a month ago. The reason you're seeing so many value deals out there, in my opinion, is because you're seeing teams that are very wary of the cap and the fact that it's going to actually contract a little bit in the next couple of years. So whereas last year, it was easy to spend freely because you said, hey, as crazy as these ever seem, the cap's even going to go up a little bit for the foreseeable future, meaning next year. Well, now all of a sudden, you're actually a year removed from the cap even getting smaller. So you're seeing teams get a little thriftier than before. And so in this market, which does not seem as lucrative for the players as a lot of us expected going into it, again, think about some of the deals you're seeing. I don't think anyone expected those types of things going into July 1st. The 3 years, $60 million still left for Ryan Anderson is a little bit more than it might have seemed even a month ago. So I think in that sense, it makes the deal a little harder, because I could see teams on a proportional basis saying, hey, if we're going to take this deal for a guy who, well, he's a good player, but certainly overpaid, and then in a cap that's actually going to be going down, a cap environment in the next couple of years, then I could see that throwing a wrench into the GMs who are actually negotiating the terms. But big picture, I don't think it derails a deal. It might delay a deal, but I don't think it derails it, because, as I said earlier, there's too many forces pushing Carmelo out of New York. I think ultimately the Knicks relent a little bit, whether that means taking Ryan themselves or kicking in more to help facilitate a third team's ability to take Ryan. I don't know. But I think either that happens, or the worst case, then there's a buyout. And for all the reasons we're seeing so much attention between Carmelo and the Rockets on the player's side, I cannot imagine a scenario where he gets bought out and he does not choose the Houston Rockets. So whatever happens, I do think this deal gets done. As far as when, I don't know. Now, the other part of the timing process to this, I know a lot of folks have been fixated on the idea of a press conference. And to me, that's overblown. I've seen so many folks on Twitter saying, well, are they going to try to do a Chris Paul and Carmelo press conference at the same time? Maybe even one for Harden. I'm not sure if there'll be a media availability for him after signing the four-year contract extension. And I think that's something that's a bigger deal on Twitter than it is to the Rockets. Because unless you're going to do a deal like the Heat did back in 2010, and as ridiculed as they were, I don't know if the Rockets want to do that. Unless you're going to do some like citywide celebration where you open up the arena, you do the smoke and the lights, et cetera, et cetera. Quite frankly, having all of those guys at one time is kind of challenging in a press conference room. It's easier to have just one guy there and the focus be on Chris or Carmelo or whoever it may be. If you have them at the same time, if you're trying to have a celebration, but if you're actually talking about us in the media, who the press conferences are for, if you're not doing those celebrations, if it's just in the media, it's actually easier for us to get to focus on one guy as opposed to having to spread our questions and everything else among three or four, whatever it may be. The other thing is that press conferences, unless you're doing the celebrations, that's the ultimate caveat, unless you're doing that, they're all about logistics. The Chris Paul trade was finalized on June 28th, announced. The PJ Tucker deal was agreed to on July 1st and was not announced and signed until July 6th was the moratorium. And yet PJ had his press conference the same day, July 6th, and Chris Paul is going to have it over 2 weeks later. And again, it's just about logistics. These things happen, and the journalists attending them are pros. Would there be a couple of questions at the Chris Paul thing about Carmelo if the deal was not finalized by then? Sure there would, but Daryl, he's a pro. He knows how to deflect, and of course they're not allowed to comment on Carmelo anyway because he's a player for another team right now in terms of his contract status. So again, I won't say that a deal can't get done by Friday. I also am not going to say that it will and that Carmelo is going to be at that press conference. To me, it's a non-event. And my guess is that actually even if they get a deal for Carmelo, he might have a separate press conference. It's easier for everyone in the media, and it kind of balances out the room a little bit to have Carmelo separate. Could they bring him to a Chris Paul thing and just have, you know, a super conference with all those guys on the table? Theoretically, they could. Or it could stretch out for longer. But in my opinion, as a media member, I just don't see it the way a lot of fans on Twitter do. I don't think that Chris Paul press conference on Friday means anything one direction or the other in terms of their likelihood of adding Carmelo before then, after then. If they do it, then great. Maybe he'll be there, or maybe Daryl can take a couple of questions about it, and then they'll open up the floor to Chris, and we can get to meet Carmelo later. I just really don't think, unless you're doing a citywide celebration type event, that it really matters that much, as evidenced by, again, doing a press conference for PJ Tucker, who signed after Chris Paul, and yet doing the PJ Tucker conference before you had Chris Paul. It's just one of those things. Press conferences, unless you're doing the big celebrations, they're just about logistics, and the journalists are pros. They're not going to, you know, it's the first time that Chris Paul, on Friday at 2, when this press conference happens, it'll be the first time that Chris Paul has done any public commentary about his move to the Rockets. He's been incredibly quiet. He issued one public statement on Twitter the day of the trade, which was basically just saying thank you to LA and to his charity, saying I'll still be around. Chris Paul has actually not talked at all about his move to the Rockets. So trust me, it's not going to be a distraction if they do a deal for Carmelo, or if the deal is still on the table, whatever the status is on Friday at 2 p.m., it's not going to be a distraction. People in the media are going to want to talk to Chris Paul. So regardless of the status of the Carmelo thing, I would not take that Friday presser at 2 p.m. as any indicator in any way. It could get done before then if the Knicks or a third team comes to the table, or it could drag on after. I don't think that the Chris Paul press conference is going to be a determiner in any particular way. Now, last thing, because I think that's all the Carmelo talk that I can put up with right now, because there are only so many ways to say the same thing, which is that we're in a holding pattern. I think the players want this to happen, but still trying to finalize those terms and get the GMs, the various front offices involved, to sign off on a deal that that they can all stomach. So in terms of that, we all just sit, we refresh Twitter, and we wait for the Woj bomb. I think we all know how that goes by now, and we'll just have to wait and see. Hopefully it happens tonight, and we can have another podcast making this one old in just a few minutes. Nothing would make me even happier than if it's like the Trading Ryan Anderson podcast I did the morning of the Chris Paul trade, which suddenly became old within like 15 minutes because of the announcement of the Chris Paul trade. Nothing would make me happy more than to publish this and all of a sudden the Carmelo thing happens. It certainly could. It's just impossible to predict because, again, both front offices, especially the Rockets, are very, very secretive. They work in silence, and I don't think there's going to be too much of an indicator. It's just going to be one of those things. We know it's likely to happen. We know there are a lot of motivations, a lot of outside forces pushing it to happen, and someday, whenever the other teams evolve, decide to come back to the table and get this done, it'll get done. But in the meantime, we wait, and I doubt we have that much true indication before that Woj bomb comes out. Now, the other thing I did want to discuss, because I promised you a few days ago, was the Summer League, because now we're through the first three games. That's essentially the opening round out in Las Vegas. The Rockets will have at least two more, because starting, I believe, tomorrow, they're going to be entering the tournament portion of the Vegas Summer League. Have not yet seen the times and TV schedule, but when that comes out, I will tweet it out on my Twitter, at Ben Dubose. But as far as what we've learned in the Summer League through three games, I think far and away, we're seeing that Troy Williams and Isaiah Taylor can play in about 26 minutes a game for each. Troy is averaging over 25 points a night. Isaiah is at 14 points, 8 assists, only one turnover. And the real telling thing, the Rockets are 2-1 in Summer League, even not having a single first-round pick on their roster. That's really strong, because when you think Summer League, you think Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum, so many of these high-profile matchups that are getting televised nationally because you have so many really exciting young players. And yet the Rockets, hell, the third game Monday against Phoenix, we actually saw Troy Williams blowing by Josh Jackson, number four pick in the draft, out of Kansas for the Suns. We saw Troy Williams making big plays against Josh Jackson to put the game away and secure the win for the Rockets. So even though the Rockets don't have headliners, for them to be 2-1 in a league that has so much star power amongst the young guys, that shows you the maturity and the leadership they have. And I think it speaks really well to Isaiah Taylor, who is under contract, and Troy Williams, who is not under contract, but it sure sounds like the Rockets are anticipating bringing him back. In his postgame comments on Monday, he referenced being particularly excited to play with Chris Paul and again with James Harden. So I think the Rockets are planning on having him around, and it's great because you look at Troy Williams, I don't think he's necessarily a great scorer at the NBA level, but he's a professional. That's the word I keep coming back to. He's a pro. And he's obviously a good athlete, he's a good defender, but in addition to that, he's extremely aware, has a very high hoops IQ, in some respects reminds you of someone who could step into that Sam Decker role. I could see some Sam Decker in him in terms of his ability to rotate, his backdoor cuts, that kind of thing. And it's not like he's necessarily going out and just blowing by people off the dribble and being a traditional 26 points per game scorer in this summer league. The way he's doing it, he's making plays off the ball, he's doing the flare screens, he's cutting to the basket, and again, once you play against NBA competition, I don't see him being able to score at a high level, but we know he has a long body, we know he's very athletic, you know he can defend, and you couple that with the high IQ and the things that he's been able to do in summer league, and yes, that's a guy who can play. I'm not going to go as far to say that he's a clear rotation player, but I think we all know the Rockets want more depth beyond the eight-man rotation they have now, especially at the wing spots. You'd want a little bit more length. Again, potentially that Sam Decker role is one they need to replace. And to me, he profiles really well. When you look at the Rockets when they're at their best, that 31-9 start last year, it wasn't actually just Trevor Ariza and Sam Decker. It was actually Trevor Ariza, Sam Decker, and Corey Brewer. You had three long gazelles at the wing spots who played varying minutes. I know everyone loved to hate on Corey because he did not hit threes at a high enough clip to be particularly useful in a Mike D'Antoni system. But in terms of his length, his defensive versatility, there were times that he really, really helped them. Now, on the balance, I definitely support them making the move for Lou Williams. I understand why they did it. They needed more upside from an offensive perspective. But there were some things when they had both Corey Brewer and Sam Decker in that rotation clicking. That defensive length and versatility gave them a lot of options. And the ability to have a deeper bench, when they were at their best in December, they actually had a 10-man rotation when Decker and Harrell were both in it. That helps you get through the grind of an 82-game schedule. So the Rockets, they need to find cheap options beyond the eight they have now. We know they're not going to invest that heavily, even though they do have a lot of non-guaranteed contracts and the biannual exception. We know they're not going to go out and spend heavily because they only have $17 million to spend until they hit the hard cap. They have at least four roster spots to fill out, so they are going to have to be fairly thrifty. They're going to want cheap guys, and if you're going to go cheap, well, might as well go cheap with upside, and that's what Troy Williams is. I guess it's possible that some team could panic and give him more money than the Rockets could offer coming off this summer league, but in my opinion, it seems unlikely. I think Troy Williams seems comfortable in Houston. I think he also knows it's a good opportunity for exposure when you play alongside Chris Paul and James Harden. Then, yeah, you're going to get plenty of opportunities to get out and transition and score, and especially for a system that he already knows and has gotten comfortable with, signing with the Rockets midway through last year and being up and down between Houston and the Vipers down in the now G League. I think there's a degree of comfort that a deal can get done now, even though he's not under contract at the present moment. His case in the Summer League has only bolstered him, in my opinion, in the eyes of the Rockets front office. I think the odds are good that as they try and fill out that roster on the cheap, because, again, they're hard-capped, only $17 million left, and you want to save at least some of that $17 million for the potential of adding Carmelo, then you're going to have to fill out those other roster spots fairly cheaply. And so if you go cheap, I would expect them to bring in some veterans, sure, the same way you see the likes of the Warriors bring in Omri Caspi, the Cavs, Jeff Green, and the cheap. If you can get a veteran to sign for the minimum, sure, I think they're open to that. But that's a couple of spots. The others, you want younger guys with upside. And when you have two internal candidates like Troy Williams and Isaiah Taylor, I think those are pretty strong candidates. Now, Isaiah Steele, not fully guaranteed, but the case he's making for himself in Summer League, it's really strong. It's not just the 14-8, it's the only one turnover. He seems in full control of the game from a leadership, from a point guard perspective. And that's big because I could see there being an kind of under-the-radar important role for him with regards to rest for Chris Paul and James Harden. I would think that Chris Paul, now at age 32, I think it's almost a foregone conclusion that whether he's injured or not, even if he doesn't get injured, I think there are going to be at least 10 games or so where the Rockets just give him maintenance rest throughout the season. James, I don't know if they give him 10 games off, but they might at least give him 4 or 5, I would guess, after what happened last year. So there's going to be a lot of maintenance games for those two. There could be injuries. And then even if there are not maintenance games or injuries, I think you're still going to want to cap them, as I said on my show yesterday with David Locke over on the Locked On NBA show. Even when they're playing, I think you probably want to max out Paul about 32 minutes a game and Harden about 35 to keep them fully fresh for the playoffs. So even though you have two legendary point guards right now in Chris Paul and James Harden, there are going to be minutes behind them. And that's where Isaiah Taylor could come in. You want a guy with upside who, sure, he can play spot minutes here and there, but also if Chris Paul is resting on a given night, he can step in and play 30 minutes on the second end of a back-to-back or whatever it may be, if that's what the Rockets need. And so that's where the youth comes into play. Because, yes, I do think the Rockets will look at veterans for some of those remaining roster spots. In the past, I've mentioned Leandro Barbosa, who's a free agent. He could be the kind of candidate for a minimum spot, previous experience with Mike D'Antoni's system, et cetera, et cetera. You could see him, you know, find a role as the 11th or 12th man on the bench. But if Chris Paul or James Harden needs a maintenance game, I don't think you're going to ask Leandro Barbosa to say, hey, step in, you're going to play 30 or 35 minutes tonight. No, it doesn't really work that way. If you're going to be doing maintenance from time to time, which I think is especially important with the Rockets having these stars, potentially now two stars in their 30s, which is what Chris Paul and Carmelo, if the deal closes, would be, then I think maintenance games are going to be important. And so you want younger guys who on occasion, sure, they might go down to the D League sometimes, but other or G League. God, that's going to take a while to get used to. But yeah, go down to the Valley. That's what I'll say. But other times are capable of saying, hey, we're going to recall you, and you might play 25 or 30 minutes this night. And Isaiah Taylor could be a candidate like that to help Chris Paul and James Harden in the backcourt. And Troy Williams, if the Rockets are able to close the deal for Carmelo Anthony, well, he's a deal if you need a maintenance game for Carmelo. Then you bring up Troy Williams, and he has the youth, the legs, to potentially play 25, 30 minutes on occasion if that's what the Rockets need to get through a rough patch in the schedule. So to me, they have been the two standouts who feel really good about what you've seen from them. Not just the numbers, but folks, they're giving you the numbers and the team is winning. The one game they lost in overtime against Cleveland. So yeah, they're 2-1, and the one game they lost, they almost won. They've been extremely competitive even without a first-round pick, and that speaks to the leadership. Those guys have played the most, and yeah, they definitely have roles this season, I would imagine, with the Rockets. Now, aside from them, Joe Cheech, Nanu Anuaku, it's been mixed. Anuaku did have a good second half on Monday, and that's good because his first half was poor. Did end up with 10 rebounds, I believe. He's done some good things. His passing has actually been a lot better than I expected. You're seeing him do some things at the top of the key. He's hitting Troy Williams on a lot of those backdoor cuts. And so that savvy is good. He's been fairly good at rebounding defensively. Offensively, he's gotten stripped a little too easy going up, in my opinion. So it's mixed reviews. I did say going in that I didn't think that the Summer League necessarily fit Anuaku's game that well. He's a little more of a traditional center. So the up and down play, the undisciplined times of the Summer League, that's not really his game. I think he's a guy who might shine a little bit more if you put him into truly more rigid NBA level play once you get to the regular season. But you've seen flashes from Anuaku, which you can see a rotation player. There are other times when it looks like he still has a ways to go, especially in terms of getting more confident with his timing and maybe a little bit more strength when he goes up around the rim offensively with the basketball. So I'd say reviews have been mixed, and some of it's also because he did sprain his ankle early in the very first game, actually in the first couple of minutes of the first game, so he's probably not playing at 100% either. I think it's a situation where the Rockets probably know more from watching him in watching him at the Valley last year, and of course seeing him in practices when he's in Houston. They probably know a little bit more than based on that than the Summer League. But to me, he's a guy. Could he be your third center in that Montrezl Harrell role? He could be. There's upside to see him take a leap the same way Harrell did. But I think the Rockets will also keep an eye on the veteran market. It's one of those things. They don't have to bring in a veteran for that third center role. Anuaku could be good enough to fill it, but they also certainly could bring in a veteran if they want a little bit more proven production, especially on a team that now might be the second best in the NBA behind the Warriors. So Anuaku, to me, has been good enough. He hasn't flashed like a guy who you say, hey, this guy is clearly that number three center behind Nene, or really 2.5, given that you know Nene's probably going to need at least 15 to 20 games off throughout the season. Anuaku has not been enough to where you say, hey, this is his role. They're not going to look elsewhere as far as veterans for the minimum of those candidates. But he also hasn't been so poor that you say, well, he can't fill that role. He's been okay. And then when you consider that the format does not really fit him and he's playing hurt, then you can make a case that, hey, he might actually be a little bit better than what he's looked through three games. But again, it is just three games. You're going to have at least two more. So these are just preliminary thoughts, as the Rockets are probably just halfway through their Summer League schedule at this point. The other guy that's getting marquee minutes, Joe Chi, he had a great start, 17-6 on Friday night, has not been as good the last couple of games. He is averaging 2 blocks a game. One thing you're clearly seeing, especially in transition defense, his sheer length at 7'2", with that, 7'7 wingspan, he's just so long. Those arms get in the way of a lot of guys. Offensively, you can see the lack of strength is an issue. He generally hangs behind the three-point arc, and it's been worse because his three-point shot has not been falling. I don't think it means he's a poor shooter. I think it's pretty clear. You look at his sample size in the CBA, this is a guy who absolutely can shoot, has good form, etc., etc. It's a small sample. He's not hitting his threes, and he's not really strong enough to make things happen off the dribble. So for now, again, as I said, I thought getting him to Houston all along was about getting his body ready more than actually getting him ready to play day one. I think there are times if he's hitting his shots and you combine that with his length and a favorable matchup that might not exploit his lack of strength that much, sure, there are times even in year one he might be theoretically capable of playing in the NBA. But longer term, it's going to be about trying to get him stronger and stronger to where he can absorb more contact and make more plays off the dribble. In Summer League, he's floated a little too much behind the three-point line. That's good because he hasn't tried to force the issue. You're certainly not seeing him look like a fish out of water you know, he seems to know his role and be comfortable with it. But eventually, you want him to be more than a standstill shooter at 7-2. You want him to be a little more aggressive in terms of taking it off the dribble, maybe even creating a little bit in the low post when you look at that frame. And at this point, he just doesn't quite have the strength for that. So there are flashes, but I never had that high of hopes for Joe Chi as a contributor year one with the Rockets. I think that's more of a long-term developmental play as he continues to gain strength. Anyway, I think that's enough for today. Jeez, 45 minutes already. We've just had so much talk about Trent Carmelo, the Summer League, all that stuff going on. So if you stuck with us through all that, I appreciate you guys so much. Love doing this show. The platform y'all give me is amazing. So for those of you that have been with us since last July, we're now basically a year old. Or those of you that are new, anyone of y'all who listen to me on a daily basis here at Locked On Rockets, thank you so much for doing so, because this is a blast and I look forward to doing this for quite a while longer. For now, though, I'll try and rest my voice and get ready for hopefully another podcast tonight. I think we're all hoping for that Woj bomb to drop and Carmelo to get to Houston. So hopefully we have that talk about in a few hours. But for now, I'll sign off and get back to refreshing Twitter. If you're not already following me on there, you can do so at Ben Dubose, or you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. You can also email us at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program. Also, a few other plugs I want to throw out there. Again, if you haven't heard yesterday's Locked On NBA, that was the national show hosted by David Locke, the godfather of this network, current broadcaster for the Utah Jazz. Check out the Locked On NBA channel. Did a few hits on Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, Carmelo, Ryan, a few kind of a higher level overview, 30,000 foot overview, if you will, of some of the leading questions about the Rockets entering this year. So if you haven't checked out that, please do Locked On NBA. Also, Locked On Podcast Network, got daily podcasts, not just for the leagues as a whole, but every team across the NBA and NFL. That includes the Houston Texans. My buddy Robert Land hosts the Locked On Texans show. They're getting ready for training camp just a couple of weeks away. So if you're not following Robert and Locked On Texans already, give them a shot, because once training camp opens in a couple of weeks, I anticipate they have some really good content as the Texans get back to work. Deshaun Watson, everyone's excited about him, the rookie quarterback. J.J. Watt will be returning from back surgery. He looks to be back at full strength once training camp opens. So Locked On Texans, if you haven't checked them out already, please do, because as we get to late July and training camp opens, they're going to be a really good source for information about your Houston Texans. For now, though, time to wrap up and for me to get back to refreshing Twitter nonstop, and I'm sure many of y'all will do the same. Hopefully we'll have another podcast in just a few minutes when news breaks, but for now, stay tuned. Enjoy your day.